Okay, so let's dive in. Imagine maybe a screen door on a breezy day.
Okay, screen door.
Yeah, and the amount of air, like the breeze you feel pushing through, it depends on how hard the wind is blowing, right? Its
Yeah, I agree.
velocity.
Great. This one's speed.
But it also depends on how the screen door is, facing the wind.
Ah, the angle.
Exactly. If the wind hits it straight on, you get a real blast. But if the door is kind of swung open, angled,
Yeah.
well, less air seems to come through that opening.
Makes sense.
Now, let's zoom way in. Think of just one tiny little square on that screen. Let's call it DS. And the wind velocity is V.
Okay, tiny square DS, wind V.
The rate that air flows through, just that tiny bit, it depends on both V and how DS is angled relative to that wind.
That's actually a really great way to start thinking about this concept of flux.
It's insight.
Intuitive, right? Something passing through a surface.
Right.
So let's take that idea now and apply it to electric fields. We use the term electric flux in a similar way.
Okay, electric flux.
But, and this is really key, unlike the air, the wind, there's no actual stuff flowing that you can see or, point to when we talk electric fields.
Okay. So it's an analogy, but not a perfect one-to-one. No invisible particles are actually zipping through.
Exactly, no physical flow, and that makes it maybe a little trickier to visualize
But
sometimes.
we do have those diagrams, the electric field lines. Those help.
They absolutely help. And the rule with those lines is basically the denser they are, the more packed together, the stronger the electric field, E, is right there in that region. So imagine we place a small flat area, let's call it DS again, right in the path of these field lines, perpendicular to them.
Straight on, like the screen door facing the wind.
Precisely. The number of lines that poke through that area, DS, it tells us something about the field strength, E. It's actually proportional to E times the area, DS.
Okay, so density of lines equals strength. Got it.
Yeah, the concentration of lines piercing a unit area held perpendicular, that's our measure of E. But what if we tilt that area?
Ah, right. Like swinging the screen door partly open.
Exactly. What happens if we take that same area DS and tilt it, say, by an angle cue relative to the direction the field lines are pointing relative to E?
Okay, picturing it, tilting the area. Yeah, fewer lines would go straight through it now.
Fewer lines.
It's like trying to catch rain in a hoop. If you hold it flat, facing the sky, you catch a lot.
Yep.
But if you angle the hoop, tilt it way over, fewer drops actually land inside the hoop's area.
Perfect analogy. So the orientation, the angle of that area really, really matters.
That's enough.
And this is why just talking about the size of the area isn't enough. We need to think about how it's oriented in space,
Okay.
which leads us to this idea of treating an area element not just as a size, but as a vector.
A vector, like with magnitude and direction.
Exactly. The magnitude is just the area itself, how big it is, but the direction. Well, we define the direction of this area vector as being along the normal.
The normal, meaning perpendicular to the surface, sticking straight out.
Sticking straight out, perpendicular to the surface, that's the direction of the area vector for a little flat piece.
Okay, that works for a flat thing like our little square DS.
Yeah.
But what about, say, a curved surface, like a ball or something bumpy? How do you define the direction then? It curves all over.
That is a great question. That gets right to the heart of applying this. For a curved surface, what we do is we imagine breaking it down,
Breaking it down.
yeah, into tons and tons of really, really tiny area elements, so small that each tiny piece is almost flat, practically planar.
Okay, like little tiles covering the curved surface.
Exactly, like tiny tiles. And from each tiny, nearly flat tile, we can draw that little normal vector sticking straight out, perpendicular to that specific tile.
So you get a whole bunch of little area vectors, each pointing perpendicular to its own tiny patch of the surface.
You got it. A whole field of tiny vectors pointing outwards or inwards from the surface.
Okay, outwards or inwards? That brings up another point. For any surface, couldn't that perpendicular line point in two opposite directions? Like, for a sheet of paper, normal could be up or down.
It could. There is that ambiguity. Which way does the vector point?
So how do we decide? Is there a rule?
There is. It's a convention, something everyone agrees on. For closed surfaces, think of something that encloses a volume, like a sphere or a box.
Like our beach ball example earlier.
Exactly like the beach ball. For closed surfaces, the convention is that the area element vector, ds, at any point always points along the outward normal.
Outward, away from the inside.
Away from the inside. We often use a little symbol, n hat, to represent a unit vector just showing that outward direction. So we write the area vector ds as its magnitude, ds times this outward unit normal, om.
Okay, so d DS pointing outwards for clue shapes, like little arrows sticking out all over the beach ball.
You'll see diagrams like that all the time. It's the standard way.
All right. So we have the electric field E, which is a vector. And now we have this tiny area element DS, which is also a vector, pointing outwards normally. How do we combine these two to calculate this thing, this electric flux?
Okay, so the electric flux, often we use the Greek letter phi, or maybe D, for the flux through a tiny area through that small element. DS is defined mathematically using something called the dot product.
The dot product, right?
It's a dot product of the electric field vector E and the area vector DS. So DAEODS.
E dot DS.
Which, if you remember how dot products work, is the same as E times DS times the cosine of the angle between them, EDS coscue.
Ah, there's the angle dependence again, just like the wind and the angled screen.
Exactly. That cosc actor automatically accounts for the tilt. It effectively picks out only the component of the electric field that's perpendicular to the surface, or equivalently, the part of the area that's facing the field.
So it measures how much the field is really piercing through the area.
Precisely. And this value, E ob ds, is proportional to the number of those electric field lines that are cutting through that specific area element ds.
Okay, EDS cos Q. You mentioned it can be looked at in two ways.
Yeah, two useful ways to think about what EDS cos Q means. You can group it as E times ds cos.
So the field strength times the projection of the area,
yeah.
The effective area facing the field.
Exactly, the amount of area seen head on
right.
by the field. Or you could group it as E oco Q times DS.
Which is the component of the electric field along the normal direction times the actual area size.
Perfect. The component of E that's perpendicular to the surface times the magnitude of the area. Both ways give you the same result, the same flux value. It's just two perspectives on the same calculation.
That makes sense. And what units do we end up with for electric flux?
Ah, units. Well, E is typically in newtons per coulomb. NC, and area DS is in meter squared. So the unit for flux is Newton meter squared per coulomb, NMC, or sometimes written NCM.
NCM, got it. So that's the flux through one tiny little bit of the surface.
Right.
How do we get the total flux through, you know, a whole surface, maybe a big curved one where E isn't even the same everywhere?
Well, we use the same basic idea we started with for curved surfaces. You break the entire surface S down into lots and lots of those tiny area elements, DS.
Okay, back to the tiny
tiles. Back to the tiny tiles. For each tile, you calculate the small amount of flux, DOAEOES, using the specific E field and the specific DS vector at that tile's location.
Okay.
And then to get the total flux A through the whole surface S, you just, well, you add up all those tiny contributions, you sum them up. ES is approximately EOADS.
Approximately. I see that squiggly equals sign again. Why approximately?
Good catch. It's approximately because when we do that sum, we're still making a slight assumption. We're assuming E is basically constant over each little DS.
Even though they're tiny?
Even though they're tiny, it might still vary a tiny bit across it. To be mathematically exact, we need to imagine making those area elements infinitesimally small, taking the limit as DS approaches zero.
Calculus territory.
Exactly. When we take that limit, the sum turns into an integral, a surface integral. So the exact total flux is ANO 0 by E20 by 820 by 8FE OODS. Integrated over the entire surface S.
The integral sums up infinitely many infinitesimal contributions. Makes sense.
That's the formal definition for total flux.
Okay. And just to really reinforce this point about the field lines, you said the flux is proportional to the number of lines, but not strictly equal to EODS.
Right. That's crucial. We draw a certain number of field lines as a visual aid, maybe 10 lines, maybe 100. That choice is arbitrary.
Right.
So you can't say the flux is exactly 5 lines or something. But what is important and what the flux does accurately represent is the relative number of lines. If the flux doubles, it means twice as many lines would pass through if we kept our drawing convention consistent.
So it's about the proportion, the comparison between different situations or different areas.
Precisely. The flux quantifies how much field is going through the surface, considering strength and angle. The number of lines is just a picture of that quantity.
Okay, I think I'm getting the hang of this. So let's just recap quickly. Electric flux. It's fundamentally a measure of kind of how much electric field penetrates or passes through a given surface.
Yep, that's a good way to put it.
The key things are the strength of the field itself, and crucially, the orientation of the surface relative to that field, which we handle using the area vector, DS, and the dot product.
You got it. Strength and orientation baked into one number, the flux.
Excellent. So, for everyone listening, maybe a final thought to chew on. We've seen how flux links field strength and surface orientation. Think about that idea, how the amount of something flowing or interacting depends critically on the angle.
Mm-hmm.
We use analogies like wind and rain, maybe sunlight on a solar panel. The energy flux depends on the angle. Could this concept, this sensitivity to orientation when measuring a flow, apply elsewhere, maybe outside physics? Like, could the flow of information or maybe even understanding between people depend on how things are oriented?
That's a really interesting extension. How receptive is the surface based on its orientation to the source?
Yeah, just something to ponder. Does the angle matter in communication and decisions? Does this physics concept echo in other parts of life?
Yes.
Something to think about.